Hello, hello. Welcome everyone to the Bar Gym Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Gaines. I appreciate everyone tuning in again and spending a few minutes with us here on the Bar Gym Podcast. This is our fourth podcast, and our guest today is Mr. Paul Rohde of the Waterways Council. Paul is a vice president of the Midwest region of the Waterways Council, which is the national public policy organization advocating a well-maintained system for our inland waterways and the infrastructure and the ports. Paul grew up 8 miles from the confluence of the Missouri and the Mississippi rivers and resides in his hometown of St. Louis, and I have to note the current Stanley Cup champions. He holds a BA in political science from the University of Missouri and completed coursework and a fellowship at Moscow State University, spending a couple of summers in the Soviet Union on a student exchange program. He's the founder of the St. Louis Gaelic Athletic Club, promoting Irish sports of hurling and Gaelic football. He enjoys volunteering at St. Peter's and Paul homeless shelter, teaching the residents chess. He and his wife Linda have one daughter, Katie, and they enjoy raising and showing miniature horses, of all things. I didn't know that, at their family's Goose Creek Farms, which is for 17 years owned the Guinness Book of World Records for smallest horse in the world. Paul has contributed to numerous publications on transportation issues and has served on the boards of several river transportation organizations, including the Coalition to Protect the Missouri River, the Upper Miss Waterways Association, and the Herman Pott National Inland Waterways Library. He's a member of the American Society of Civil Engineers. He formerly sat on the Missouri River Recovery Implementation Committee and is a former board member and congressional committee chair for the St. Louis Agri Business Club. In March of 2008, Paul was awarded the Public Policy Award from the River Industry Executive Task Force, and he received the award for excellence by the Commanding General for the Mississippi Valley Division of the Corps of Engineers. Paul's also received commendations for his river advocacy and work on behalf of education and conservation, including Field & Streams magazine, Heroes of Conservation in 2008. Paul also serves on the advisory board of the Audubon Center at Riverlands Migratory Bird Sanctuary and has served on the Mississippi River Advisory Council for American Land Conservancy. He sits on the planning committee for the St. Louis Black Ducks chapter of the Ducks Unlimited, and the first chapter of Quail Forever, which was formed here in St. Louis. So without further ado, Paul, I appreciate you coming on the show and letting our audience learn more about yourself and the Waterways Council.
My pleasure, Brett.
So just to get started here, again, I appreciate having you on the show. We've met a few times over the years, and you know, myself as a former operator, now you know, working on the insurance side of things, when I was on the operations side, I was fairly active in various groups supporting the waterways industry, like AWO and IRPT, National Waterways Foundation, and of course, Waterways Council. And I always kind of looked at AWO as focusing on operational issues with the Coast Guard and the Corps of Engineers, and WCI, in my opinion, or my thought was always more on lobbying initiatives and key advocacy for the industry. And just curious, you know, I wanted to get your take to our audience, you know, what is the Waterways Council, kind of why it was created, and what are the goals of the organization?
Well, it was created for exactly that reason, Brent, to do advocacy work and lobbying on issues that are important in the industry. And really, the reason WCI was created, we're in our 16th year now. There was a real need to have an association focused on the inland river navigation infrastructure, locks and dams. It was something that maybe was touched on by other associations, but nobody really took ownership of that topic and that issue. And that's why WCI was created, as you said, to advocate for a modern and efficient and reliable transportation system. We have a unique coalition. That's probably one of the biggest words I use when I, well, not biggest words, but one of the most used words when I talk about who does WCI. It's the word coalition. You know, certainly the carriers and the towboat companies and the barge companies are part of it. But in addition to that, the products that are shipped, the shippers have a huge footprint in WCI. Energy, agriculture, cement, steel, all of the products that go in the barges are part of that. We also have ports as members of ours. Organized labor is a unique function of membership of WCI that you won't find in other associations. We collaborate and have had members in WCI that are almost exclusively environmental or conservation focused.
It's a big
it's a big part of the way the Mississippi River system is managed by the Army Corps of Engineers, and because of that, you know, we all have to sort of collaborate, and we do a lot of work with some with conservation and environmental groups.
Well, good. You know, when I first got into the industry, I wasn't, you know, really aware of all the industry groups. And then, as I said, I spent some time, obviously, at AWO meetings and IRPT meetings and with Waterways Council. So I wanted to at least give our listeners some background if they weren't aware of all the stuff you guys do.
Yeah, it's a whole alphabet soup. There's no shortage of associations and obviously there's a lot of work to be done. So we try to collaborate as best we can with all the organizations, stay in our own lane, but support others in efforts that are important to the industry. You know, the biggest, I think, reason for WCI starting was the industry could look at the increasing balance of the Inland Waterways Trust Fund. So that's the fuel diesel tax from towboats. So that revenue coming in wasn't being spent out by Congress. And so we had at one point over $400 million in revenue just sitting there, and it, you know, is easy pickings for a Congress that maybe wanted to spend it on something else. And at the same time, we had a continuing increase in the list of projects, new construction, rehabilitation that needed to happen. And so the industry and other stakeholders got together and said, look, let's get an association to really get a handle on this. And so we do that through direct lobbying. We've got a relatively small staff. We only have 5 full-time staff, 4 in D.C., and I'm in St. Louis. We do hire other government affairs specialists on contract to help us out. In addition to direct lobbying, grassroots advocacy is a big part of what we do. You know, our members, because we are so small staff, we rely on our members to help carry the water, if you will, and get our messages out. And so there are many members that have maybe that aren't part of the corporate world, but are associations and have their own members that run pretty deep. And so we really rely on that grassroots advocacy to get our message to the Congress and the administration. And then the third part is public education and media relations, where we do outreach to educate the public and through media broadcast and print media outlets on the importance of inland river transportation and really why it matters to every American, not just the towing industry or the community that carries or ships products on our inland waterways. But as I say all the time, if you flip the light switch on that wall and expect the lights to come on, then you are touched by barge transportation.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's good to hear. Well, on that note, it is funny. I came across an article yesterday, and I think it's something to the effect that the Department of Transportation is projecting freight tonnage moved throughout the system, not just the waterways, will grow by 40% by 2045, close to 25 billion tons. And obviously the highways are already congested and rails near capacity is, you know, and obviously we're biased, but, you know, moving things on the water is an incredibly attractive alternative, you know, and you guys are obviously one of the key groups focusing on infrastructure. And I wanted to drill down on a couple of the key things I know you guys do for our industry. And, you know, the one that always, you know, we talk about, I think it's every couple of years, is WRDA, the Water Resources Development Act. I'm just curious where we stand on WRDA and, you know, what, tell the audience kind of where we are with that.
Sure. WRDA is the traditional vehicle for authorizing legislation. You know, for the river industry, there's two parts to legislation. One is authorizing bills, and then the second one, which happens more frequently, are appropriations bills, and that's where the funding really comes or doesn't come. You know, it's not like this just happens on its own. It has to. It takes hard work. It's earned, frankly, from hard work, good strategy, conveying sound policy to decision makers about the importance, because they don't know about barges. They don't know about the inherent advantage of moving by river. It's just assumed. You know, we built this infrastructure in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s for the most part, and then they've just been enjoying the benefits of it for decades, with some exception. But anyway, so WERDA is that authorizing legislation. It's typically every 2 years, although for a clip in recent history, we've gone as many as 7 years in between WERDA bills. It's not just a navigation legislation. It has a lot of owners to it, just like the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has a lot on their plate, and WERDA typically is a Corps-administered legislation. By that I mean, if it's in a WERDA bill, it's typically going to fall on the plate of the Army Corps of Engineers. So that is what? Not just navigation, but flood protection, environmental, recreation, ecosystem restoration. There's a whole host of issues that the Corps of Engineers has to contend with. And those are typically authorized in the WERDA bill. Right now, we're on a cycle where 2020 would be the next WERDA bill in a typical scenario of every other year. We had one last year. There has been a lot of movement on the Senate side through the Environment and Public Works Committee, but the House has been relatively active. There was a hearing back on July 10th with the Water Resources and Environment Subcommittee. We had one of our executive committee members, Rob Innes, did a great job. Rob's with LafargeHolcim and testified on behalf in front of the Water Resources and Environment Subcommittee. Another hearing in April to kick off things with the new Congress, of course. That was focused on the Inland Waterways Trust Fund and also the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. So things are moving, but as in river transportation and Congress, things don't always move quickly. But things are moving on Capitol Hill to get a WERDA bill put together for next year. You know, there's a rich history of this. WERDA was preceded by what's called the Rivers and Harbors Act, and that goes all the way back to 1824, where Congress threw $75,000at the Corps to remove sandbars and snags from the Ohio River and the Mississippi River. It's been a driving legislative vehicle for this whole idea that our rivers are not just owned by the states, but it's a national waterway system. It goes as far back as the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, and it is a national system, and you know that infrastructure of locks and dams that were eventually put in place is a national system with national responsibility.
Yep, no question. In terms of maintenance, is that looked at separately, or is that thrown into WERDA as well?
Well, the main thing with maintenance is funding, and so that would be more on the appropriation side. But you could have do have maintenance issues addressed in a WERDA bill also. WERDA can certainly handle not just construction, but also maintenance of locks and dams.
Yeah. Well, and
speaking of maintenance, you know, we've enjoyed record level of funding for the Corps' operation and maintenance. Now, that's a different pot of money. That's not the Inland Waterways Trust Fund, like the construction account of the Corps, but O&M has seen record level funding, and as a result, you know, we've seen a decrease in unscheduled lock outages over the last several years. That's a good news story.
Absolutely.
And again, this doesn't just happen on its own. It takes a lot of effort to convince Congress and to work with the administration on that to get those kinds of results.
Right. Well, a good segue there on lot closures. I think we've got a significant closure coming up here shortly into September, I think, on the Illinois River. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we've been working with the Corps for about 3 years now to get the word out on these coordinated closures, and I think coordinated is the big word. There's been a lot of deferred major maintenance on the Illinois River, and finally a plan was put together to, over the next several years, address that. You've got the Rock Island District overseeing this, and so they've got closure starting this summer and going up into 2023 to address locks like Marseilles. This year is closed, and that's both partial and full closures. Also at Starved Rock, they're going to, you know, putting in bulkhead recesses at both of those locations. So you're going to have operational locks, but with restrictions and no ability to pull unpowered barges while they're doing the construction. The bulk of it's going to be next summer at 2020. You'll see the locks like LaGrange. That's going to have not just major maintenance, but major rehabilitation. Lock machinery replacement going on at LaGrange, but major maintenance at Peoria, Starved Rock, again at Marseilles, Dresden Island, and Brandon Road. We'll have upper bulkhead recesses installed. And so you're looking at partial closures and full closures for a good portion of next summer. And then we'll have a functioning river again, if Mother Nature, anyway, provides in 2021 and 22. But then in 23, Dresden Island, Brandon Road, they'll look at doing some upper miter gate installation at those two sites in the summer of 2023.
Well, they've got some things planned out here.
Yeah,
which is good. It's good.
That's a lot. Yeah. We just wrapped up. One of WCI's members, the Illinois Farm Bureau, put together a series. I think there were five different locations along the state of Illinois to talk with the Corps of Engineers so that people have a handle on when this is going to happen and what kind of restrictions we're dealing with. The Corps just updated. They've got a nice one-sheeter that explains when and what type of work it's all going to be done. You can find that on WCI's website under our media section, or just Google the Rock Island Corps of Engineers District and stay updated on that. It's a moving target. They have changed some of the dates as a part of the high water situation that we were dealing with. So some of those dates have been moved back, but you know, whether it's infrastructure or Mother Nature, there's always challenges in working with the river.
Absolutely. Well, another good segue, man. You're running this for me. You know, high water, obviously, it's been an unprecedented, you know, length of high water. When I was on the operation side, 2011 was pretty tough. I think 08, if I remember, was pretty tough. And you know, we've always had high water issues here and there, or low water issues. But you know, obviously this year it's been unprecedented. In fact, one of the other articles I read, I think Walter Blessy was quoted. He's never seen it this sustained. What's WCI's thoughts on the high water this year?
Well, you can't legislate everything, and you know, we're not an operational organization, although we certainly talk with our members who are dealing with the operational challenges of these significant high water events and low water. I might say it's not just high water.
Sure.
Think about the winter of 2012. We were in a real crisis mode with not having an operational Mississippi River between St. Louis and Cairo. So there are all kinds of challenges that Mother Nature throws at you. We try to make sure that, you know, we focus on sound public policy that focuses on the infrastructure. And, you know, the one thing I can say about the high water or low water is that the industry's resiliency to work around those challenges, that's something that I try to showcase when I talk about the industry to congressional offices and the administration is the ability of this industry to work with high water conditions, no water conditions, and an infrastructure that would be into several decades of receiving its Social Security check if it were a human being.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Well, you know, one of the other hot topics of the day is obviously, you know, the high water's impacted the grain harvest or the planting, so to speak. The harvest will come here shortly. But I was just curious your thoughts on, you know, there's we have a lot of tariff talk, you know, it seems like every other day in the trade sanctions and some of the things that are impacting the ag markets. Just curious your thoughts on that.
Well, it certainly has been a tough year for our partners in the agriculture community. You're seeing continued low commodity prices, and combine that with the trade disruptions from the tariff talk that you mentioned, and then on top of that, of course, the aging infrastructure system. There's a lot of uncertainty if you're an American farmer these days. We're the largest exporter of corn. Soybeans is almost right up there, and there's a lot of tough competition behind our shoulder in Brazil and Argentina, just to name two countries that are making strides in their infrastructure. And, you know, most of that, of those agriculture exports in the U.S. are shipped on the river, and there's a host of reasons for that. The efficiencies that the river provides and the cost that the rivers provide, it's a major variable, and it's the whole reason that American farmers are competitive. And we don't have control over the White House or the president's Twitter account, and can't control the tariff situation. We're all bystanders, unfortunately, in that situation. So, you know, my focus is control what you can. And right now, where the hole hits the water or the rubber hits the road, whichever you want to use, it's in the appropriations bills to continue to ensure that we are working with the Congress to plus up the numbers that come out of came out of the White House in March, and ensure that we can get at the backlog of locks and dams. I think the tariff situation, in one way or another, will get sorted out. However that shakes down, we're still going to have the infrastructure that we leave to the next generation. And so, you know, our focus is on the second half of that sentence, make sure that we continue to get at the backlog of lock and dam construction, rehab, and operation and maintenance needs.
Yeah, good point. Well said. And, you know, I've always felt, you know, the industry is incredibly resilient. You know, we get thrown. I think Murphy's Law was invented for the river industry, frankly. You know, we always get hit with just crazy things, high water, low water, all these different things, tariffs. But even if you compete with someone, someone's willing to help you out if you're in a bind. And it's just the industry is incredibly resilient. And really to support a lot of what you've been saying is, I think if we're able to address a lot of this infrastructure, you know, just general maintenance, or like with Olmsted, that was a huge project, is once we get the infrastructure back and in good standing, you know, the river industry can really thrive, hopefully. Not that we're not thriving now, I think we are, but it's just, we occasionally have some significant headwinds, as you know. Hey, just shifting over to another topic, you know, I've always felt that the industry has an incredible story to tell, you know, and since I've been in the industry, we've done a better and better job of marketing the industry, thanks to guys like you and Waterways Council, AWO, et cetera. You know, there was a study that came out a few years ago, I think, and I believe it was National Waterways Foundation that had published this, and you guys had some involvement, but the Transportation Modal Comparison Study. And I know I quote a lot of those numbers a lot, but just curious if you can give us a quick synopsis on that study.
Yeah, the National Waterways Foundation, as you mentioned, that's the center for research where industry can address public policy issues through studies, education, training programs. And really, the foundation is an anchor in helping the public to understand the importance of the system and the industry. And so there have been a number of studies that have come out from the National Waterways Foundation. The one you mentioned, I believe, started in 2008 and finished up in 2010. And that looked at the modal comparison, so energy efficiency, safety, capacity, and so forth. And really, it's kind of the aha moment when we take some of those graphics from that study and take them into a congressional office, and you say, okay, if you want to move this amount of tonnage, you've got one towboat with 15 barges or 1,050 trucks if it's grain, and it's even more if it's a petrochemical. It's 2,160 trucks to move the same amount that one boat and 15 barges can move safely off of our highways, not through our neighborhoods. You never hear about towboats in the morning traffic report. I mean, these are things that resonate with every consumer, every motorist across the country. And so the foundation studies help to illustrate just what role that river transportation has in the intermodal. I mean, we got to have all three. And I think rail and trucks are enough in most people's heads because we interact with them as motorists. But rivers aren't the same thing. It's a different entity. And so the studies that the National Waterways Foundation have provided, and we'll take those and make graphics out of them and then use them in public education and even in our advocacy to help people understand the importance of river transportation, even if they don't live in a state where a major river or waterway goes through. They are impacted by barge transportation.
No doubt. Well, and I remember a couple of times doing some lobbying in D.C. Even some of the senators or congressmen from river states, believe it or not, they didn't really know how important it was. Which was funny, but you know, again, having that data to be able to show and reinforce, the beauty of the industry, and then, but also the impact that we have is very, very important.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, we can't assume that a member of Congress, even if they are from a river state, is going to understand just how much revenue is generated to their state, just how much their state relies on river transportation. You know, here in Missouri, our Department of Transportation, the State Department of Transportation, would be bankrupt if we didn't have barges moving road salt alone. And if you had to truck that in every year, we'd never be able to survive. So you're exactly right. You can't assume that a member of Congress is going to know about barge transportation. And you know, we see that with the revolving door of members on the committees that we work with most closely. And it's a continual outreach to make sure that their offices, their staff hear from us and understand the importance and use Waterways Council as a resource.
Right. Well, I certainly appreciate everything you guys do. I know the industry does as well. And I guess last but not least, I know WCI wants to grow membership, wants to grow their footprint. You know, how can the listeners get more involved with WCI? Where can they find you guys, et cetera?
Well, that's a great point. I appreciate you bringing that up. You know, we are totally reliant on our members for funding for everything that we do. And you know, I think it's easy to kind of say, well, somebody else is handling that, right? Not necessarily. So, you know, I'd encourage all of your listeners to get involved in WCI, and there's lots of ways you can do that. Certainly, we'd love to have you as a member, and you can do that very easily from our website, which is waterwayscouncil.org. Short of that, there's lots of other ways to get involved on the public policy front. You can, from your the ease of your cell phone, just text the word LOCKS to the number 52886 to get involved. We have we've got a way now with just a few clicks. You can look at your state, find out information about the importance of barge transportation to your state, contact your state, your federal legislators for that state. With just a few clicks, you can, from our website, send a letter to your House representative and your two senators. You can get on their Twitter pages, their Facebook pages, and send a note on their social media about the importance of river transportation. We've even got a whole slew of videos and a new TV commercial we're rolling out that you can share on legislators' pages. You can share it on your own Facebook page and encourage your friends and family and community to understand, appreciate the importance of river transportation and do something about it.
Well, that's great. Hey, Paul, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate you spending a few minutes with me. And, you know, it's been a while since I've seen you in a person, so I really appreciate the time. The information is great. And I really appreciate you supporting and obviously being part of the Barge In podcast. Thank you.
All right. My pleasure.
Thank you.